Thank you, Honorable Member. I will assist with Ellen. Just want to tell you about any approaches. Do you have any apology, Ellen? Okay, Honorable Harris, it's apologized. Those are not here, I'm sure they're still on their way. But I think we should start our meeting, since we don't necessarily need a quorum, and we are dealing with a very important piece of legislation. The agenda of today, as you might have seen, is almost similar to yesterday's program. But today we are dealing with the briefing by Arke Jenkins on the proposed changes to the money bill, changes to the Financial Management of Parliament Act. I was sent to the whip earlier. It will be important that the committee, probably early next week when we meet, we just look, set aside time to look on the pieces of legislation that we need to process this year, so that we have got a very clear timetable, time framework that will inform our work in terms of Parliament, when is it expected, and so on and so forth. Obviously, National Treasury will also be involved. But the two pieces of amendments that we are supposed to be looking at, or two set of pieces of legislation, is more around the money bill and this one. This is what Parliament has referred to the committee this year. So I just wanted to remind honourable members that next week we'll then find a way to actually agree on the process that we need to follow, otherwise we'll be in the dark. Advocate, over to you.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. Visitors, thank you very much. The amendments to the Financial Management of Parliament Act. Chair, if you can allow me then, Dobbins, just to say to people who might not have heard it yesterday, this is now a product that's coming from a technical team. It's not a product of the committee yet. The committee must make it its product. My suggestion is that at that point the committee makes it a draft bill, which is then published for public comment, so that we define the process properly. Just for those who want to report on this, that's the one thing in terms of this bill. Different to yesterday's briefing on the money bill amendment procedure, this amendment flow also from a court case, the Premier of Limpopo was the Speaker of Limpopo, which involved the Limpopo Provincial Legislature making a financial management legislation for itself, which was envisaged in terms of the Act, the Financial Management of Parliament Act. But the court found that the provinces do not have that competency to make their own financial legislation. And gave Parliament a certain time frame in which to make arrangements for a framework, a regulatory framework for provinces. And the deadline, well, it's not a deadline, we are just required to report by 9 September 2013. To the Constitutional Court, how far are we with this process? Of course, it would be ideal to report that there's a bill that's been signed and it's been implemented, or there's an act at that stage, or something in that line. So what we're doing with these amendments is, the one from the Constitutional Court is making this act applicable to provincial legislatures. That's the one amendment I would like the committee to their person. The other one is there's a reporting requirement, and this comes from the technical team, that is not consistent with the reporting requirement in the Public Finance Management Act. The Public Finance Management Act gives an accounting officer 5 months to compile the annual report and audit the financial statement, and then 1 month, maximum 5 months, but 1 month after the accounting officer has submitted that to the minister, the executive authority, the minister must stay in Parliament. And Parliament's Financial Management Act did not allow that last month. It just said you get 5 months to submit, and the executive authority must immediately table it to Parliament. Or the proposal is there, and I'll take the committee through it, is to say the executive authority needs a month also to make it same as the other organs of state in government. The last amendment I'll take the committee through is the it's a political issue. It's the oversight mechanism. The issue there is that we have at the moment what's called the Parliamentary Oversight Authority that reports quarterly to the House, both houses. And the issue was put before the technical team, can't we use this Parliament Oversight Mechanism, Parliament Oversight Authority, as the oversight mechanism in the Act? And we can, because there is still checks and balances built in to prevent any conflict of interest there. But the main thing there is to deal with the membership, and I'll take the committee through the details there. So, Chair, the long title of the First Amendment we propose is to include provincial legislatures, and then to remove this part to provide for financial, to provide for financial management norms and standards. So we're not providing norms and standards now, we're going to provide for provincial legislatures in the Act. This is just administrative. The preamble also to include provincial legislatures. And then the definitions, we need to include the definition of provincial legislature and the provincial annual budget and parliament for clarity later on in the amendment that we're dealing with. But specifically provincial legislature and provincial budget needs to be defined and referring there to the Public Finance Management Act as well. We're removing any references here to the norm and standards again, because we're going to provide completely for provincial legislatures. And we're creating Chapter 2, which is now the mechanism that was used in the past privilege and immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. That act is flows from a constitutional provision that says additional powers and privileges and immunities may be provided in national legislation. So in 2004, the act was promulgated, which applies both Parliament and provincial legislatures, and the way it's done there is the way that we have followed here. So you have a chapter to say this Act applies to provinces, and where in this Act you read Parliament, it means provincial legislature as well. Where you read Speaker and Chairperson, it means Speaker of a provincial legislature. Where you read Accounting Officer of a Parliament, you must understand it also as Accounting Officer of a provincial legislature. And that is what we're doing in Chapter 2. There might be issues around this, Chair, if I don't want to preempt any kind of public input that we will get on draft bill. But there's requirements in this Act, Financial Management of Parliament Act, to have a certain audit committee, for instance. Now, some provincial legislatures might have financial problems with having an own separate audit committee, and they might have an issue of shared audit committee with another province. I would suggest that we get input from provinces on this. This bill will definitely be a Section 76 bill because it affects the provincial financial interests. And in terms of the constitution, we'll have to put through the Section 76 process. So provincial legislatures will have a specific process, a specific mandate to make when it gets to the NCOP. But in the public participation process, I would suggest that they also make submissions to this committee. And the purpose of that would be to say, whereas this provision at the moment says the whole Act applies to provinces, to find out is there or are there some provisions in this Act which is going to be a little bit onerous, maybe a lot onerous for provincial legislature, and maybe we need to include something in addition. But I'm not in a position, and neither is the team in a position, to say what exactly will that issue be. It might vary from province to province even. So we'll have to see what comes from the provinces there. Just additional things which we saying when we read national revenue fund, we must read it as a provincial revenue fund. I was not looking at these parts. The Minister of Finance must be also understood as a member of the Executive Council responsible for financial matters. And these powers of the NA and NCP must also be understood as the powers of a provincial legislature and the rules issued. So that was the, for me, the most convenient and also most clear way at this point in time to provide for provinces in the legislation. Simply to say this Act applies to and to see whether when provinces work through it with their political principles, to see are there some provisions in this Act that's going to be problematic for them. Chairperson, that was the first one. But while we're on this one, I made a little note right in the beginning. I can take you back there. We need to amend the financial management act, the Public Finance Management Act. That's not there. We'll need to amend the Public Finance Management Act the same way we amended the Public Finance Management Act when we passed the Financial Management of Parliament Act. One will have to put into the Public Finance Management Act that this act doesn't apply to provincial legislatures anymore. And there's only one or two provisions of the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, that apply to Parliament, and that specifically pertains to withholding unspent funds, and you have to still submit, although the act doesn't apply to you, you must still submit your monthly reports to the National Treasury to consolidate into the national budget, as well as your own budget. So those provisions say, but there's other provisions where the Public Finance Management Act says the seeker of a provincial legislature has certain treasury functions. And where you read treasury, you must read it as speaker of a provincial legislature. Now that needs to be removed. To remove it, we need to include in this act certain amendments to the Public Finance Management Act. Those amendments, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, will need the consultation of the Minister of Finance. So, on that point, I would suggest that when the committee gives the green light to make this draft bill, we take the draft bill through, through the consultation process with the Minister, as well as through a public participation process, which will include provincial legislatures. That needs to be done as well. So the other issue which I alluded to, which was that the executive authority, the speaker and the chairperson, as well as the secretary to parliament, they said can't we use parliamentary oversight authority, the POA, as oversight mechanism that's envisaged in the act. Section 4 envisages that parliament establish an oversight mechanism to maintain oversight over parliament's finances. Now, the way it was drafted at the time was to say it must be a standing committee, a joint committee of both houses. The joint rules must provide for the operational issues, the membership and so on, except that the members, and that's the part we've now scrapped up, except the members of the executive authority, speaker and chairperson acting jointly. The deputy speaker of the National Assembly and the permanent deputy chairperson of the NCOD may not be members, and they may only participate on invitation. Now the POA as it is at the moment fulfills the functions of this oversight mechanism, but it is chaired by the speaker and chairperson jointly, as I understand it. To comply with this act, we need to remove that provision. But while I'm saying that the issue of accountability and of conflict of interest specifically is dealt with in the act in Schedule 3, because the question that arises immediately is what if the speaker and the chairperson give them instruction with financial implications, which are allowed in terms of this act. If there's a necessary budget item or necessary expenditure that must be made, but there's nothing in the budget for it, the accounting officer cannot authorize such payments because it's not in the budget. They need to get permission. If the accounting officer authorizes that payment that's not in the budget, that would be unauthorized expenditure and he or she would be liable for that. So what the Act requires is that the accounting officer informs the, that's not section 37, if I can maybe I'll take the accounting officer must inform the executive authority that it might be unauthorized expenditure, and then the executive authority must give permission for that to happen. And the permission is limited, and it's at section 37, it's up there now, the executive directive with financial implications. So they give one in writing to the accounting officer, please make funds available for one or other event that was not included in the budget. Between the accounting officer and the executive authority, they will have to get the documentation correct, and the executive authority may in the end allow such payment, but only in exceptional circumstances. We'll look at 5A there, an expenditure of an exceptional nature, which is not provided for in the budget, and which cannot without serious prejudice to the interest of Parliament be postponed to a future parliamentary appropriation or approval of funds. Now the question, Honourable Chairperson and Committee, is that if the executive authority gives such an instruction in good faith, how can there then, there must be some kind of checks and balance against this. So how can the executive authority then be held to account for that? Who's going to make sure that it was indeed compliance section 5A. Now, the understanding that I have is that, well, in fact, the Act would require this executive instruction to be referred to the oversight mechanism. If we get in the oversight mechanism, we will have to look at Schedule 3. Remember now, the oversight mechanism, as the amendment are, is now the Parliamentary Oversight Authority, which is chaired by the Speaker and Chairperson. But when you look at the Schedule 3, there's a specific prohibition against the... Well, it's Schedule 2, my apologies. There's a prohibition against the executive authority putting themselves in a conflict of interest. First of all, sub 2 says you must conform to the principles of good governance set out in this schedule. Act in a manner that's got integrity and arrange the private, well, it's not a private affair. 4B says members of the executive authority may not expose themselves to any situation involving the risk of a conflict between their official responsibilities and their private interests, receive remuneration, may not receive remuneration, etc. So the issue is really that the POA will have to, within its own internal operations, come up with a mechanism when they're doing oversight over decisions that were taken by the executive authority to prevent a conflict of interest there. The way the Act envisages at the moment is to say, you're not allowed to be part of that oversight mechanism. But as I indicated, there's an instruction to say, no, once you use that mechanism, and when we use that mechanism, we will either use some kind of subcommittee or the presiding officers will recuse themselves based on Schedule 2's code of ethics for members of the executive. So, Chair, that is the second amendment. As I said, that is from a... Parliament's internal operations comes from Secretary to Parliament and from the presiding officers themselves. So we need to look at how we can use the PO and make this a functional mechanism, oversight mechanism for Parliament. But there needs to be some kind of prevention of a conflict of interest there, is my advice on that point. Chairperson, the third part. That on the Sector Committee said it was an interesting development that happened last year. As you're aware, that Parliament retains its unspent funds. And in terms of this Act, unspent funds forms part of Parliament's budget, and it's called Parliament's own funds. Now, Parliament's budget must be approved by Parliament. That's page 18, section 17. I don't know the page numbers are the same on my page. 18, section 17. My apologies for that. Now, Parliament's budget consists of donor funds, consists of appropriated funds, and consists of Parliament's own funds, which are the unspent funds of the previous year. And Parliament needs to approve its own budget. Parliament also needs to approve the appropriation bill, as well as the Adjustment Appropriation Bill. Now, those bills contain all the money the Treasury appropriates to government departments, including Parliament. What happened last year was we were dealing with unspent funds, and Treasury said, we don't want your unspent funds in the budget that's reflected in the appropriation, because it's not money that we are appropriating to you. It is money that you already have. So the question then came up, how do we deal with unspent funds? And the way we supposed to deal with it in terms of the actual executive authority to table a budget and for Parliament to approve that budget. So it's a second process. It can either be the whole process or as Parliament is approving the appropriated funds, but Parliament can either approve its own whole budget or just approve its own funds, its unspent funds. But it needs to be approved by Parliament in terms of the Act. But the Act wasn't very clear on it. The reason why it was not very clear is because this section 17(1) was in the original bill in 2008-2009, but it was taken out at that time because at that time the committee felt that these issues are already provided for in Parliament's internal operations. We don't have to have it in Act of Parliament. But it created a confusion last year, of which I was aware. So what we're doing, we're putting this, suggesting to putting 17(1) back, which will then make it clear that if you look at 17(b), that the executive authority must table, for referral to the oversight mechanism, any draft revisions of approved allocations of Parliament's own funds. So that's an adjustment process, but what it means is that it will be clear for officials as well as for the executive authority and the accounting officer how they need to deal with their own funds, not to put it in the budget that they take to treasury, but to deal with year and to get it approved. Chairperson, that was the third issue. There's one more issue, which is on page 39, section 59 and 60. That deals, as I said earlier, with the submission of the annual report, which, if I might be frank with the committee, I'm not aware, no one advised me that there is an issue with this, of the submission of this report. In other words, Parliament's only getting 5 months to submit its annual report, whereas government department's getting 6 months. But I believe that in terms of the accountability of the executive authority and the way that that annual report is drafted, it is advisable that they get a month to look at that report, because they will have to answer to the Houses in a debate about what is said in that report about Parliament's finances. They are finally accountable to it. So I would suggest that you cannot just assume that they know what's in that report. They need time to be taken through it after it's been submitted to them. And the best way to do that is just to make it exactly the same as what happens in other government departments. If you look at section 59, the way it was written is that the accounting officer must submit the annual report so that the executive authority can table it in Parliament within 5 months at the end of the financial year. And in the sideline, I'm saying, compared to section 41D of the PFMA, which provides that the accounting officer has 5 months to submit the annual reports to the executive authority. And then the executive authority has a month to submit it to Parliament. The amendment is trying to do that, purports to do that. In section 16, the executive authority must table the annual report within 1 month after the accounting officer, received the audit report, which is the time in case it must submit it to them. So that's the intention of that amendment. Chairperson, those are the amendments to this Act as it is. Of course, we will have to take out the Schedule 1, which is taken out in this presentation. It's Schedule 1 is the norms and standards for provincial legislatures, because we're not dealing with norms and standards anymore. That's Schedule 1 being taken out, and we need to include amendments to the PFMA. Chairperson, that's all for me. Thank you very much for now.
Just to just give us a brief summary of the 4 points that you've now addressed. Then I just want to get that.
I didn't hear that.
Just a brief summary of the presentation that he's done. He mentioned the four issues that we addressed. Just to give us go through the four issues, just to make sure that we have.
Madam Mayor?
Oh, Chair, I think the question came when we were not aware that the advocate is only looking at what has been amended. And we have been following the legislation, and then when you were on page 35, I catch up on that on the other day. So I think what we are requesting is just to maybe to quickly summarize only the amendment, only what is
the four key issues.
The four key issues. Yes.
But it's not the entire legislation that is being amended.
Yes.
The four key areas.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. That's the slide we dealt with last year in the briefing. The First Amendment deals with the oversight mechanism, Section 4, where we're saying we want to make the Parliament Oversight Authority the oversight mechanism, and we have to amend the membership of that. The checks and balances are still there in Schedule 2. The Second Amendment is making the whole Act applicable to provincial legislatures. That's based on the Limpopo, Premier of Limpopo Constitutional Court judgment, and that's inclusion of Chapter 2 in this bill, which says this also applies to provinces. Third Amendment, the adjustment budget procedure in respect of own funds, Section 17. That's the rollover, Chairperson. Exactly. And then the last one, section 59 to 62, the tabling of the annual report, to give that 1 month period to the executive authority to consider that report before they give it to Parliament. And that is simply to keep it consistent, the same as the Public Finance Management Act.
Any comment on four? We'll not take one by one, let's just go generally. Just on the first one, advocate, I didn't know the what was it? The first, the oversight mechanism. Maybe let me allow members. And then I'll come. Madamin, followed by Ma Adams, Honorable Goronov, Ross, and Luyenge in that order. Welcome, Honorable Chava.
Thank you, sir. On the tabling of annual reports, if you look at, I think it's subsection 6, because, yeah, 6 close 1. I don't know if I'm referring you correctly. The executive authority must table the annual report in Parliament within 1 month after accounting officer receives the audit report. Now, I don't know whether there's something missing there, Chair, because for me, the executive authority, they are the Parliament themselves. And we, as the committee, suppose they've actually gone through this report before it gets tabled in the Parliament. Yeah. Where is the committee there?
Let's take the second question before you respond. Madam?
Chairperson, mine isn't on the presentation, but on the paper. On page 9, under chapter 1 on page 9, shouldn't that read part 2 instead of chapter 2? That's correct? Because chapter 2 has to do with oversight, executive authority and administration of act. Page 9. Then another question. I noticed for the first time the Act says on page 17, 10 working days. That's the first time that from yesterday there is a working day, specified as working days. On page 17.18, 10 working days. And then I want you to explain to me on page 22, promptly. Would you say that 10 working days is promptly for a bank account in which all monies received by Parliament must promptly be paid in? That's on page 22, right at the top. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, thank you very much. It's more on the procedure. I think the proposed amendment with regard to the oversight mechanism is a very good proposal. There is a huge problem that nobody is really taking oversight Parliament serious because of the way that POA is organized themselves, and you know, because Speaker, the national chairperson of the NCOP, sits, you know, in. So it becomes very problematic to be negative and ask, you know, pertinent questions about the administration of Parliament. So I think it becomes a little bit of a political thing. I think it should go to the POA, this amendment, and there's going to be definitely a process with the two officers with regard to that. There might be a very good reason why they sit in, but that is a serious need in terms of a lack in terms of oversight. So what I want to propose is exactly the same, that as soon as we have, I don't think it is here, because I think when the decision was taken by Parliament, they had no other way other place to park this legislation. But really there's so many other spheres in Parliament that are involved with regard to this legislation that we're going to need some quite a good public participation process within Parliament and committees, and then well outside, maybe only with the legislature.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to Honourable Colonel, with regard to the oversight of POA, what is the current status before we endorse this Act? The current status in terms of oversight. Is there any, and what laws were regulating these oversights? The current ones. This one, before we get to this. Chairperson, I'm just a bit concerned if the Public Funds Management Act is not applicable to provincial legislatures anymore. The Act as it is, because the Act should give us details as to how we manage our finances. Exactly. I think that's what we're trying to achieve, to have a full management system and checks and balances in terms of how we finance, how we manage our finances. Is this enough? I always thought that the Public Finance Management Act was the basis, and that this was these acts were an add-on to the PFMA. It seems that it's now not applicable. Is this Act then enough to give us more details of how we finance, how we manage our finances? Thank you.
My apologies for coming late. One issue is on page 21 with regard to the treatment of unspent funds. So it is clear what the Act is saying around this issue. But I would want to get an understanding as to how do you go about the utilization of or the management of this suspect account, because it refers to monies that are not necessarily unspent but ungained. Do we have that account in Treasury, and how it is therefore managed?
Okay, Zomko. Covered that.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you for those questions. The process of the annual report, if I can take them as the questions came in, you referred to a committee. I don't know if you're referring to this committee, but it won't be this committee now. In terms of the Act as it is at the moment, the executive authority, which is the Speaker and the Chairperson acting jointly, is accountable for financial management of Parliament to the Houses. And the accounting officer is accountable for the financial management to the executive authority. So we have this line. That's the same as what we have in government departments. So the process, which is at the moment the 5 months, does not allow the executive authority to actually study the annual report on which they need to answer. They can be called to the House, or there can be a debate. They can even be called to the committee, that POA, if it is a POA, and to answer certain questions. But as what we see with SCOPA, the person that needs to know all the nuts and bolts needs to explain how the day-to-day operations work will be the accounting officer, not the executive authority. But nevertheless, because the executive authority must also hold the accounting officer to account, they need to know what's in that report and understand everything in it. Otherwise, the question can be rightly asked, like SCOPA asked the minister, what have you done to your accounting officer that doesn't know how to do financial management? You are responsible for this. SCOPA cannot fire that accounting officer. The executive authority must take account. So that is the process, and that's why it is necessary, in my view, for the executive authority to know and to understand that annual report. The way we draft the annual report at the moment, it's a project in Parliament. All the units in Parliament decide what should go in there. There is a central point that coordinates the drafting of the annual report. Of course, the Finance Management Office does the finances and the books that's submitted to the Auditor General. We have an audit task team that deals with Auditor General and goes through the audit of the institution. And that audit report, with its management letter that's been sent around, finds its way into the annual report. And at that point, that the accounting officer reports to the executive authority in a meeting to say, we are ready with the annual report. I want to hand it over to you now. and to address the changes then, to at least give the executive authority a month to go through that. There's no role to play here for this committee. The role that will be played is that oversight mechanism. The annual report will go there, much like the annual report of a government department goes to SCOPA. And SCOPA is in a committee. So the oversight mechanism must be a joint committee because Parliament is bicameral. So we'll go to the oversight mechanism, we'll make a report, we'll call the accounting officer, the chief finance officer, whoever they think is necessary to account. Usually they will ask the executive authority to be there to see what answers the accounting officer is giving, because they have a stakeholder in the process, and then make a report to the houses. And the houses can then decide whether to debate that report or not. And it's at that stage where, as the role of a minister would be, the role of the executive authority would be actually to defend their annual report. So that's a process.
Maybe just before you ask that one, the assumption should, in fact, I think you've clarified what executive authority are you talking about. It's not the executive authority in Parliament, it's the executive authority of Parliament, which is the Speaker and the Chair of the NCOP. Now, in terms of trying to align what happens in government and Parliament in terms of accountability, in applying the PFMA, what is the discrepancy? For what you are saying, like 1 month discrepancy, 5 months vis-a-vis 6 months. So just want to align that, that we 6 months across, so that we give the accounting officers ample time to study the report from the accounting officer. I think it's clear on that one. Okay. Now, the parliamentary oversight authority, who constitutes that? What is this structure in practical terms? For my own edification, I don't know. I just wanted to get.
I will deal with that. I might just find a document here which sets it out. Let's see here. The Parliament Oversight Authority, I can say to you in the meantime, Chairperson, let me address, if it's okay with members and with you, to address that question together with Mr. Ross's question on the current status of that. Let's just say, from an oversight perspective, legislation that compels us to have an audit, that's the Public Audit Act, requires us to have an audit, as well as our Financial Management of Parliament Act, requires us to have an audit, requires us to report. But other than that, the Public Finance Management Act doesn't apply to Parliament anymore. One or two provisions that says that we need to report to Treasury or how we are doing, that's fine, that's all. But the rest, there's no specific place where we must deal with oversight other than within Parliament. It's not like the Parliament must come to Parliament and deal with us. So the current status of the POA, it will have to change if this goes through, because the POA is not an open committee as I understand it. There's no public participation there. But the oversight of Parliament does require that it's a public participation process. Thank you. I'm looking for the document, but I'm just being informed by Tanya Lyon, my colleague. She deals in the Office of the Secretary with all the forums, the chief groups forums, the POA and so on. She says the membership, you get the chair, the speaker, the chief whip of the ANC, chief whip of the NCOP, senior whips from all the political parties, the chief of the Democratic Alliance, and then that's obviously opposition, I think, yeah. And then the secretary to Parliament is ex officio member of that committee, because he needs to report on that. That's how it is at the moment. And if they report quarterly, as I understand, to the houses. There was one last year, or early this year, last year there was a report. My advice, I had informal discussions a few years ago when this issue was raised about using the POA instead of another committee in Parliament. The POA will have to transform itself as well. I can say that with honesty to this committee. The POA will have to, first of all, if they do oversight over the example I used, the executive director with financial implications, or if I consider the annual report of Parliament, then surely the Speaker and the Chair cannot be chairing that committee or subcommittee. They will have to sit on the other side. Point one. And that we can do in terms of the schedule. We can say that in terms of the schedule, you will have a conflict of interest while you're sitting there. And the schedule prevents that. So let's get either somebody else to chair, or we make a subcommittee to deal with point one. Point two, it will have to have public participation in there. Oversight is a constitutional imperative. Parliament must perform oversight, and there must be oversight of Parliament's books in this. No, nothing in the Constitution that I'm aware of that says that when Parliament does oversight over its own books, you don't need to include the public. But it won't work. It's one of those things. The Constitution says that in your legislative and other processes, and the process Parliament are involved with in terms of the Constitution is legislative processes, oversight processes. You get the certain interventions which are oversight over international agreements. There must be a facilitation of public involvement unless one can justify that it's reasonable to exclude the public. From Parliament's perspective, I cannot see how that can happen. From the maybe state security point of view, there might be certain issues, but not that I'm aware of within Parliament. So POA will have to conform itself. I hope my colleague is taking notes on this. to comply with the Act. So that's where we are at the moment. There is a POA, it can happen, but certain changes will have to be made. Chairperson, there, very useful. Thank you very much, ma'am. I think you're right. It should be part two, not chapter two. There is a chapter two that starts with oversight. 100%. The issue of working days. Working days are defined, or the term working day is defined, I think. But it means similar to what it means in the corporate, excluding weekends and public holidays. In terms of Parliament, even our Fridays and Mondays, which are constituency days, is considered working days. So that's there, ma'am. But your specific question on, that's not 71 working days, you said, when you must submit your draft strategic plan, 10 working days, I think my view, my experience is that it's sufficient, but the 25-1 point you ask, you must deposit money promptly. Promptly, it's interesting, there's a few court cases around the word promptly, because we get it in the Constitution as well. Sometimes you get promptly, sometimes you get the word without delay, sometimes you get within a reasonable time. And the courts have actually said all mean the same thing. It means as soon as possible for you to do it, without any delay. So that is the point there when we're talking about timelines. And when money must be paid into account. We don't want cash lying around Parliament. That's, I think, what the purpose of that provision is. We want cash lying around which are taxpayers' money, which can get lost. So I think that's the provision. I don't know if there were any further concerns on that issue. I think I've dealt with parts of the question on the POA. The process of the bill itself, where we're going with this, and whether we will have a proper oversight then, Mr. Kurnoff, I think that was the gist of your question. The Auditor General has raised a few concerns, if I can be frank with the committee as well, but where is your oversight mechanism? Who's maintaining oversight over your books? So that is an issue that's unresolved year on year, and that's one of the reasons why we're trying to bring the POA into the operation. But it was a very interesting comment you made, sir, on that you might feel comfortable asking the POC in question or uncomfortable questions. That needs to be addressed. I mean, when it comes to oversight, from also what I heard from Minister Manuel's speech yesterday in the House, Parliament needs to be strong on oversight. And if Parliament wants to be strong on oversight, it needs to be extra strong in its oversight over its own funds. And that was a issue that was not being said by me now, but that was said by the commitment that drafted this Financial Management of Parliament Act. You have to be very strict on your own funds if you want to have a platform to criticise or to judge or to evaluate government department funds. So if the amendments to Section 4 can assist in that, then one has to deal with that internal operation of the POA to make it work effectively. Now, as I said, and Mr. Kuhnhoff raised the issue of public participation, my take on the legal side of issues is you have to have public participation in the oversight of Parliament's books. The question, Honourable Ross, on the oversight and the applicability of the Public Finance Management Act, it's an interesting thing. It came out quite strong in the court case because there's a perception within National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries that the Public Finance Management Act action regulates financial management of provincial legislatures, but it doesn't. The fact that it says in, I think it's Section 3, says in Section 3 that this Act applies to provincial legislatures to the extent indicated in the Act. So it only applies where it says, provincial legislatures, you have to do this and this and this. And the Act does that. In a few places it says, provincial legislatures, you may keep your fund, you do not have to return your fund. Provincial legislatures and Parliament, you have to submit annual financial statements to the National Treasury for inclusion in the consolidated budget of consolidated financial statements of the Republic. Not the exact quote, but that's the gist of the meaning. At other places it says, government departments and constitutional institutions or public entities, you have to do the following, X, Y, Z. So the Public Finance Management Act is explicit when it applies and when it doesn't. And I've gone through my years that I've been here. Our council submitted it to the Constitutional Court. There was discussion in the Constitutional Court. And when one reads the minority judgment of Judge Yakub in that Limpopo judgment, it's very clear that there's a problem. There is no regulatory framework for provincial legislatures. They are operating in what's called the spirit of the PFNA. If it gets you...
That is in relation to the provincial legislature, not provincial government. Yeah, okay.
Only the legislature and the charge. Provincial governments included in the PFMA. So it's only a very limited extent that the PFMA applies to provincial legislatures. And the same can be said about treasury regulations. When one reads the treasury regulations, it's very clear that they do not apply. And it's the regulations themselves make it clear. So that is why the Constitutional Court, I think, wants Parliament to report back to say, are you going to fill this gap? You thought you filled it at once, but the provincial legislatures cannot make their own legislation to provide for their financial management. You have to do it. And you have to report back to us September 2013. So we're going to fill a gap, Uncle Ross, with bringing the promises in here. And what we're taking out is just those, we would even minister at the stage when Parliament amended the PFMA to have their own financial management legislation. But the Minister said, don't only take out those one provisions you've identified, take out all the provisions which will become meaningless when you have your own financial management legislation. Not to take out those which still have meaning, for instance, the submission of your finances to have a consolidated financial statement of the Republic. So it's only those that become pathologists and...
No, you're on call. And that's the one who's interrupting. Doesn't that require the amendment of PFMA? Rather than this act that we are dealing with.
Both.
Both.
Both. We need to do both.
Okay.
What we did with the Financial Management of Parliament Act, at that stage you have a little section at the end that says laws being repealed, provisions being repealed, and you just put in what sections of the PFMA you're repealing. But we need to consult the Minister of Finance on that. I don't see that as a problem. That was done last time without any problems.
All right.
Thanks, sir. I think the last set of questions...
Yeah.
Sorry.
What is the implication in terms of finalizing this matter? Because my understanding is that PFMA supersedes this particular act. So what happens when we finalize this while there are no amendments on the PFMA in terms of implication, implementation?
Honourable from Rome, correct? PFMA states that where in the case of a conflict, PFMA prevails. It's interesting you get in a few take precedence. So that's why we want to have to amend it. Although there's no conflict envisaged in between the two. it might be, any conflict might be, which provision do I include when I submit something to Treasury or when I submit something to my oversight mechanism? Is it in terms of the PFMA or is it in terms of our new amended Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act? The content of the issue that can be in conflict did not arise when Parliament is financial management. But one doesn't want that conflict. You actually want to have a smooth transition from a limited allocation of the PFMA to financial management of provincial legislatures applying to them. And that's why in that same piece of legislation you will amend it. You'll do it in one piece of legislation. So it will be not necessary to think, well, okay, we have a regulatory framework for provinces now, but there's still something of PFMA that needs to be sorted out. We'll do it at the same time. I think when we draft the amendment bill to be in that format that we use in terms of amendment, but it will become clearer because there will be a provision in there to say these provisions of the PFMA are being amended. So I think the last question was on the Aspen funds. I think the honourable member call it a suspense account. Sometimes people get uncomfortable, but not my mind. It's actually my mind. I hope it's not a suspense account. Oh, it's slash fund is the problem, sorry. But the Treasury is nothing keen on hearing suspense account, although it is there with things hanging, going nowhere. Unspent funds, of course, it's specific. It can be savings, it can be funds that we just, because the project didn't use that fund, it's there, for whatever reason, it's there. The process of dealing with it is that it must be allocated in terms of the budget. It can't be that it's just the discretion of somebody in Parliament to use that fund for something. If there is a need, as I said with that reference to the executive directors, nothing stops the executive from saying, let's use that fund for something that's very necessary. But they need to account for that. It needs to go to the oversight mechanism. But the normal way of dealing with unspent funds is to come at the end of the year, identify your unspent funds, to decide what must be done with those unspent funds, to take that decision through a political process and to have an approval from houses to say this is what we're going to use the unspent funds for. We need that approval simply because you need a baseline, you need something to evaluate and to maintain accountability. To say, but we've agreed that the unspent funds should be for this and that and that. What one also sees when the budget goes through is that National Treasury will say, okay, you've requested X million or X billion for your budget, but we've seen that you have so many million unspent funds, so we will give you budget, but only to that point where your unspent fund can fill the rest of your budget. So usually that decision is almost implicit made what we're going to do with the unspent funds. We just need to put it into the right budget line items. But usually the unspent funds are spent like that. Treasury just withholds the part that we requested because we still have unspent funds and they use that money for other priorities of government. Chair, thank you for that round.
The bill is not officially before us, so we mustn't take too much time. It is good to embed discussions on what must go into. Honorable Van Rooyen, Luyenge, Honorable Ross, Van Rooyen and Rob.
Yeah, thanks. The justice will check my understanding on the current composition of the POA. It said that the secretary is the ex officio of the structure. And in my understanding, the secretary is the accounting officer. I'm not sure, because it sounds like a provision for what to be a player in a referee center. Because the accounting officer must report to the authority, that is the oversight authority, which ultimately reports to the executive. I think the executive issue, the COVID there has been cleared. But on this, I just want to confirm that, because then it says really this structure was no way, from where I'm sitting, there was no way in which it was going to be an effective structure. The composition is extremely flawed. Can I get a response on that? Because really, to me, it was like just for establishing structure for compliance sake. Thank
you. Honorable, so that you respond to both.
Just a very short question, Chair. Is it really the most clear way to go micro provinces in terms of the discussion, you know, copying it from national to make it applicable to provinces? Oh, I'm not an expert on how you write the legislation, but certainly can't we do a bit better in terms of this? It's a very important act, and just making it more clear in terms of perception when you come to provincial legislatures. You know, the reference to parliament and then it's actually applicable to legislatures. Is it not a bit confusing for people out there? Should the act not be written a bit more in detail? Or are other members happy with this?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I've been assisted by the lady in dark on my right. Around that, you are quite correct. advocate to you, Chairperson, the suspense account that I'm referring to monies that are unclaimed. Maybe with special reference to civil servants or anybody who is under the payroll of Treasurer, whose beneficiaries do not exist. Do you take those dues to a trust fund, a magistrate trust fund or whatever? In provinces they call that a suspense account. I don't know how do you term it at this level. That is the last round. Unless there's still one for the road, this is the last round. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I have only just the composition of the POA. This is an old document from 2004 that I still have. I'm not sure if the POA is still exactly like that, but that's the membership. Speaker, Chair, Deputy Speaker, Permanent Deputy Chairperson, Chief Whip of Majority, Chief Whip of the Council, Chief Whip of the Largest Positions, Second Largest Oppositions, and then Secretary to Parliament. There's a footnote. The footnote says, Secretary to Parliament serves in the POA in an ex officio capacity and does not have voting rights. So my interpretation of this governance structure, and it was set up as a governance structure in Parliament, to decide on certain priorities, to give certain directives for the Secretary to Parliament. They did not want to, I think, and I wasn't privy to setting this up, but they did not want to make another parliamentary committee that is a committee in terms of the constitution which is open to the public and which operates like a normal committee. I think that's why Secretary is an ex officio member at that, so that he or she is forced to attend to account and to take the directions from the POA. That's the way it is. If we want that to be the oversight mechanism in terms of this act, my understanding, as well as my colleague, and I'm not going to quote them on this, I'll put my own neck out there, my understanding is that the POA will have to, one, provide in the internal arrangements how to deal with the conflict of interest so that you can have effective oversight, and secondly, it will be, unless it's closed for constitutional reasons, as authorized by the Constitution, it must be open to the public, including the media. So that's how I see the oversight mechanism of Parliament. So it will change. It will have to change. If they want to make provision for the specific functions which is set out in the Act, and a lot of them overlap with the present functions of the POA, a lot of the functions are set out in Section 4, what the oversight mechanism will do. A lot of them are done by the POA, but there's also additional functions. But the POA will have to rewrite the rule that is applicable to it. when it deals with these functions from the Act, it will have to operate in terms of the Act, not in terms of governance model. That's how I understand. Honorable Ross, the best way of drafting the Power and Privileges Act works, is working quite well, so it is a way of drafting. Whether it's the best, I don't know. There are two other ways that we considered when we look at how to make a draft. One would be to have a definition for legislatures, which will include Parliament as well as provincial legislatures, and just say throughout the Act, the accounting officer of a legislature, and make it applicable like that. One can also be specific to say, throughout the Act, Parliament and provincial legislatures must do the following, or the accounting officer of Parliament or the provincial legislature. I think they all are going to end up in Rome, or all will get there. Personally, I find the way that we've done it here, as well as the way from where we borrowed it, works quite well. Especially, what is different to this Act from the Powers and Privileges Act is, in Powers and Privileges, you get it as a last chapter, or second last chapter, to say this Act applies to provinces, or these provisions apply to provinces, and then where you read speaker, it must be speaker and chairperson, it must be a speaker of a provincial legislature. I prefer to put it right at the beginning, so that when you start with the Act, you know exactly where you're going. So that's my take on it. Honorable Nwenge, the suspense account, I don't know what you call it. I just know that the Treasury doesn't like a suspense account being open at the end of a financial year. That account must be closed. I remember that from dealing with the Auditor General and Scopa. But you are correct. Where do you put the money that's meant for a position, but that position is not filled by a warm body? Or what do you do with it? And that is basically hanging there. It's supposed to be in Parliament allocated to a division or a section. But you don't have the money to spend on anything, actually. I mean, yes, at the end of the year, when you're trying to make everything balanced and there's a shortage at one side, then that money is sometimes shifted to the other side. If it's allowed to be shifted, you need certain permission to shift money as well. So that is there, but I understand what you mean. I think the critical issue around that suspense account or your unspent funds, for whatever purpose, you need to get away from the idea that it's free money that you can spend on whatever you might feel is good. But to say that must properly be authorized by Parliament for specific purposes in Parliament. To fulfill the strategic objectives of Parliament in any case. So for me, the critical part of the question is, do we have sufficient oversight over unspent funds? I think the Act as it is, it provides for it, but we need that oversight mechanism to provide an effective check and balance. An amended Parliament Oversight Authority. Thanks, Chair.
Baya Tanti. Any other comment? Nothing. All right. Thanks, Advocate. As I said earlier on when we started, I think as much as in terms of the legal expectations of the court, Parliament is to come back by September 2013 and indicate on how we need to, it is going to rectify this anomaly. We don't have to wait for that. I think we need, after this discussion, factor in whatever needs to be factored into the proposed amendment, and then we need to formalize a process so that we can dispose some of the pieces of legislation that before this committee. We don't want to find ourselves congested problem at some point. Those which that we can be able to move faster, let us do. From one sitting, I think a lot of work has already been done. Just need to clarify that at another level. Of course, the issue of who really becomes the oversight authority of Parliament is a very dicey one. It's a very dicey one. There was a debate about the presidency at some point because if budget is passed by the House, who then becomes president oversight of? I think the monitoring and evaluation has got an appropriation committee now to play an oversight role of it. But the president is the presidency. I don't think the current arrangement or setup requires any further amendments or so on the piece of legislation that exists. I think it is adequate. Now, Parliament also, we need to be very careful. I think the structure that is there, which is a multi-party structure, from where I'm sitting, I haven't really applied my mandate. I think it is an appropriate structure. It is an appropriate structure. Unless we want to put another committee to oversee, with the committee of Parliament itself, because all committees exist for Parliament. There's no committee that is above Parliament, committees of Parliament at the end of the day. But I think what you've shared with us is sufficient for us to begin to move forward. Honorable members, I think we've done our work for today. There's a sitting at 2 o'clock. The debate is quite lively and robust in there. And I can see they can keep us really rooted on our seats. Let's continue the good work. I keep on checking whether you are there or not. And I'm marking the register of those who goes out. Thank you.
Not with love.
Okay. I'll go for you.